This is the BBC.
I'm Eleanor Rosamond Barraclough. Join me now for a walk in the woods. Every night this week, I'm taking you on a walk through a forest of the imagination. Sometimes they're cosy and friendly places where your only risk is bumping into a disgruntled heffalump. Sometimes they're a little more threatening. Chris, where are we?
We're in the forest of the Brothers Grimm, their wonderful sort of folkloric imagination. Twisty gnarled trees, tree roots across the forest paths that can inadvertently trip you up as you try to negotiate your way. Faces that become apparent in the tree bark, staring down at you. You can have a sunlit dell, a wonderful sort of idyll where you can stop and pause and look around and have a lovely moment, and then you can walk into the very darkest recesses. It can become tangled up, particularly if you're being accompanied by a helpful huntsman who is taking you for a walk and then inadvertently just disappears and leaves you in some briarthorn cul-de-sac. You know, this is the stuff that goes on, I think, in the Brothers Grimm forest.
Oh, we haven't found a huntsman yet, but I'm with Chris Riddell, the writer and illustrator. He's the political cartoonist for The Observer and the creator of dozens of children's classics. There's the Goth Girl series and the Edge Chronicles, and he's just published Once Upon a Wild Wood, which is, Chris, I suppose, a sort of introduction for young children to the world of scary fairy tales.
I suppose it is. I think all fairy tales, not just the scary ones, I think they last, don't they, because they speak to some real truths, I suppose.
But what's so magnetic about the Brothers Grimm? I mean, it's a horrible place, isn't it? It's full of witches and wolves. Why are we even wanting to go back there?
It's a way of, I think, storytelling that works beautifully in the oral tradition of this, I suppose, what I call the Northern Renaissance, you know, the dark imagination, not the sunlit Latinate idylls of shepherds and dryads, but something altogether sort of spookier. We've got trolls under bridges. We've got witches. We've got sprites. You know, this is a very different location.
So I'm hoping you've got a pocket full of breadcrumbs, because we're heading deeper and deeper into this forest. It's getting a bit darker.
Now, you know, Little Green Raincape, who is the main character in Once Upon a Wildwood, my picture book, she does carry breadcrumbs. That is in her survival kit.
I'm wondering, I don't know, are we even going to be able to get down this path? It's like, should we give it a go?
We should give it a go, actually. Yeah. This is all part of this thought experiment. How far can we go?
How far can we actually squeeze our way through this deep, dark wood? So how do you think children react to the Brothers Grimm today? I mean, there's an incredible level of violence in the original tales that we might not expect if we're used to more sanitised retellings of them.
I think they're accretions, aren't they, of all the retellings. That's what attracted me, I think, to using the various tropes and having a little bit of fun with it. So obviously my picture book is for sort of younger readers. My bears are sort of comfortably threatening. There's Beauty and the Beast, and we follow, I think, the travails in their relationship, I hope, are all seen through the eyes of our protagonist, which is a little girl in a green cape who set off for a walk. I think the children who read the book or have it read to them will subsequently go on and discover these fairy tales, and I think put two and two together and go, ah, yes, that's familiar, that's the three bears, that's Rapunzel, these are the seven dwarves.
So if you yourself are building on those references, those cultural accretions, where were the Grimm brothers getting their ideas from?
I suppose they were going right back to the actual source. Tangled European forests, where there was a very real sense, I think, in this sort of pre-Enlightenment age, of threat, of the unknown, of the wilderness as a place that was, you know, a deeply inhospitable place. Rather than, you wouldn't go for a walk in the woods for your sake of your soul and to commune with nature, as Byron might. You basically were trying to get to the next village without sort of coming to some very real harm. You know, the forest was a place of danger. And if possible, you know, you would chop those trees down and keep as far away from those wild places as you could.
So how do you go about tackling these deep, dark themes of the forest and the fairy tale without giving children nightmares? Or are you trying to give children nightmares, maybe?
I would never want to give children nightmares. As a parent myself, you know, I know how inconvenient that can be. You know, a charming anecdote told at bedtime, then recounted to you at, you know, midnight. I can't get to sleep, Dad. It's that story you told me. So I don't want to do that, obviously. But I think there is a sense of gathering round the firelight.
So really it's that sense of, well, we're in here and it's warm and it's cosy and there's a fire.
Yes.
And then they're out there. I don't know, I'm thinking about the sort of images I grew up with when I was reading fairy tales in my childhood. And it's often the pictures that leave the real scars. Some of the trees, and Arthur Rackham, for example, they can be quite terrifying, can't they?
Yes, they can. And I think as children we all have memories of that book or that illustration that completely spooked us. I remembered being utterly terrified of what the illustrator would have imagined was a rather lovely drawing of a clown with sort of piebald hair.
Oh, clowns are never good if you're a child.
No, I was terrified, absolutely terrified. In fact, to the extent that I remember one night lying in my bed, looking across my bedroom floor where this book had been inadvertently left open on that page. I was transfixed. You know, the notion I would actually get out of bed and go and close the book, you know, for my own comfort, I couldn't do it. I just lay staring at this picture. So you're right. I think images have got a unique power.
Arthur Rackham, of course, one of the great illustrators of the early 20th century, was one of the most famous fairy tale illustrators. And for him as well, the forest is quite a dangerous, scary place. His trees are spiky. There are little creatures hiding around the branches.
Those figures that you glimpse out of the corner of your eye as you're walking down the sort of forest path. And also, you know, Arthur Rackham's trees are animate. They have faces. You know, looking around, I see trees now with their branches. They can look like arms and fingers reaching out, can't they?
Very much. Yeah, and there's even one over there. That almost looks very Rackham-esque, the way it's sort of bending forward and then you have the two limbs extended. But it's not just Rackham, is it? I mean, maybe the classic image, if we're used to watching Disney films as children, that scene from Snow White where she's running, she's trying to escape through the forest and all the trees are clawing at her.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's an experience, I think, that rings true to any of us who've sort of become lost and thinking, where earth, how do we get out of here? And then you snag your cagoule on a sort of stray briar and you think, oh my goodness, what's going on?
Is that a hand?
Exactly.
And it's that sense of being able to imprint your imagination on something that maybe you can't quite see, that's slightly dark or black, it's just a shape a little further away that you can make into a human or something worse than human.
The patterns and the light that you get within a forest that is both enclosing and intoxicating as you wander through. I think there's a very real notion in the forest of wondering where its boundaries are. And I think there are tales in middle European sort of folklore of someone straying from the path and just never being found again. You know, just because the forest is so endless, it goes on forever.
And those endless, quite terrifying in a way, forests have been a source of inspiration for all sorts of very famous artists and illustrators.
Yes, I think of the great Caspar David Friedrich and some of his wonderful sort of paintings of forests. I think, you know, within the surrealist imagination, you think of Max Ernst and the way that he actually takes textures to actually create almost sort of wooded sort of fields. Anselm Kiefer, again, you know, wonderful sort of artist of the sort of both the natural world but of foreboding and darkness. And I think all these imaginations come out of, I think, a northern sensibility, you know, very far away from the classical tradition.
And that most northern, in a way, of illustrators, Kay Nielsen, he was not only inspired by forests, but he in turn inspired Disney.
Kane Nielsen is one of our great illustrators of the Golden Age, you know, the turn of the 20th century, producing these incredibly beautiful books. I think you can see the Scandinavian forest in what he does, the extraordinary sort of birch trees, the curve over the picture plane, endless patterns that forests can make in northern climes, where you're looking through tree trunks at figures almost disappearing out of view. At my most pretentious, I like to think of Kay Nielsen as embodying the sort of Nordic Baroque. Don't quote me on that, honestly.
It's too late, you're on radio.
So. Oh dear, okay.
But then how does Kay Nielsen come to influence, say, Disney?
They love that sort of sense of folklore and evoking folklore. And Kay Nielsen gave Disney this singular vision that they could use. And I'm thinking Fantasia, I'm thinking the wonderful sort of Night on a Bear Mountain, you know, which you know, has got a real sort of Nielsen sensibility to it.
Terrifying.
Very dark,
I was
very terrified.
So yeah. Frightened as a child.
Absolutely.
That one.
The witches come out and, you know, prepare for their sort of extraordinary coven. And then, you know, this great horn spirit appears over the top of everything. But then you get, I think, the counterpoint to that, which is that wonderful moment of that passing and the bell tolling in the quiet of the dawn rising, and you feel as if you come out of the forest then, and you're reaching the safety of the village, and there's the bell tolling you home. At the end of your walk, you've survived.
See, I don't think we've got that far yet. There's more darkness, and there's an even smaller, windier path. So, breadcrumbs? Still
yeah, definitely
being
breadcrumbs. Yeah, I think. Yeah, you know, have you brought the hovis? Is what I've got to ask. Or, no, any bread
any
will
brand
do.
Will do. Yeah. Yes. Is definitely getting a lot murkier, and the path is getting a lot smaller. That's always the bit in the fairy tales that seems to be the most frightening, isn't it? It's that moment where the path is no longer clear, or
yes.
You wander off entirely from the path.
And a path is trodden, isn't it? A path has been made. People have moved, have walked along that way. So you trust the path. Once you leave it, or it becomes less distinct, you know, then you've got to think for yourself, and then you've got to survive in this wild place.
But that Germanic forest that you've been talking about is still the one that filmmakers and writers turn to. I'm thinking Tolkien, Game of Thrones. There's something in that northern idea of the forest that really doesn't exist in other cultures.
I think you're right. I think it is something about and maybe a memory of a time when the landscape was wooded to an extent that it simply isn't these days. And what we have now are small pockets, particularly in the British Isles, where you still have that ancient woodland, that quality of the ancient woodland. I'm always intrigued, I've got to say, when I walk through the countryside, when I see a dark sort of copse on a hill, you know, that's a miniature wood. That's something that you can see the boundaries of it. And yet I'm always tempted to sort of go into it. It's where the ancient gods are still hiding out. You know, they've been forced into these very small, you know, pockets. But I still think they're there in some way.
I think maybe it's time to try and find that trail of breadcrumbs and follow our way back out of the wood again.
I really hope that there are no birds around who've eaten those breadcrumbs. That would absolutely extend our adventure, wouldn't it?
Quite terminally, possibly.
Possibly, yes. Yeah. We might find refuge in a gingerbread house, but that wouldn't end well.
I've read your book. That doesn't end brilliantly.
Well, there's always a way to escape a gingerbread house, and that's to have a cake fork handy. Great for breaking down those gingerbread walls.
Do you know, I happen to have such an implement in my pocket. We're probably going to be all right.
Fantastic. Swiss Army cake fork. It's what you need.